So we are beginning a new sermon series this morning, and let me give you forewarning. It's going to be pretty long. It's going to take us through Lent and even a little past Easter. We've been talking a lot this year. I have been a little bit, and hopefully you've heard me, that we are looking to be more intentional about being on mission, that we are being more intentional about the way in which we make disciples. Now, I'm thankful that we have a church full of disciples, and this church has been faithful for making disciples for years and years. But I will say, as a pastor, and I think other pastors would agree, and some other church leaders, that we have not always done the best job. That is a confession of being very clear and intentional about the way in which we went about making disciples and helping folks live out their vows of membership or being faithful in their prayers and their presence and their gifts and the service and their witness. And so, you know, there's a renewal to that. It's time to double down on that as we think about, as we move forward as the church, how do we make disciples? And so we're exploring that and looking at that and trying to get our whole mission, everything we do, aligned around making disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. But I was, as I was looking at sermon topics, how can we explore that? And so I thought about the life of Peter. Peter the apostle, he, in exploring his life, it is really a model of the making of a disciple. Every story is a little bit different. Every one of our paths is, not always the same. But there are things that we can learn from Peter and the way in which he progressed in his faith that I think every single one of us can apply, regardless of where you are on your journey. If you're just starting out, or maybe you've been a Christian for years and years, wherever you are, we can learn from Peter. And so we're going to be moving through his life, and we'll go through some ups and downs and some failures and some successes of Peter and the disciple that he became. And so we're beginning today, and the Gospel of Mark. Mark's Gospel is the shortest Gospel. It was the first one written. It's the second book in the New Testament, but it was the first Gospel written. And it's like Mark just gave the bullet points, right? He did not go into a lot of huge detail a lot of the ways. And so as we get to these first two verses that we're going to look at this morning about the call of Peter and Andrew, his brother, there's more detail that are given in a couple of the other Gospels, but there's not a tremendous amount of detail even there. But this just cuts to the chase, and I think there's some bullet point takeaways from this first mention of Peter in the or Simon Peter in the New Testament. And so I will read the two verses. I think we're going to be looking at verses 16 and 17 of chapter 1. Know that Mark just jumps in there at the very beginning, doesn't give a birth story, doesn't give the birth narrative. It just begins with John the Baptist, and John the Baptist preaching that Jesus is coming. And then he's baptizing, and then Jesus comes and gets baptized, and then Jesus starts gathering his disciples there at about 30 years of age. And so we pick up now in verse 16, and it says, "As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. 'Come, follow me,' Jesus said, 'and I will send you out to fish for people.' At once, they left their nets and followed him." And this is the word of God for we, the people of God. Thanks be to God. And so I want to start today, before we jump into the text, and we're going to kind of unpack it a little bit verse by verse, but asking this question: is there a difference between being a church member and being a disciple? Is there a difference between being a church member and being a disciple? And I want to say right up front that I am setting up kind of a false dichotomy right here. I mean, really those two things should be the same, but they're not always the same, are they? And you think about why some people are part of a church and why they may choose to join a church. And I will tell you things that I hear from time to time. Not from anyone here, but, you know, from other places, from other ministers tell me this. The people will go out and they do church shopping. You ever heard of that? Church shopping? And they join a church based on what do they got for me there? You know, what kind of programs are there that can minister to my needs? Do they have a good children's program? Do they have a good youth program? Do they have a good choir? You know, do they have a contemporary service? Do they have, you know, what do they do that's going to minister to my needs? They're basing it, or is it, you know, centrally located to my house? Do they have child care for my kids? And people will base their joining a church based on that. Or who goes to that church? You know, do important people go to that church? Because I need to do some networking. And so I'm going to join that church to network for my business or for my social life or whatever. So they join the church for that reason. They may join for a variety of reasons. Some people have in what I would call sort of the little brown church in the wildwood kind of outlook about church. And it's sort of like, well, my mama is a member of this church and my grandmama and my great-grandmama. It is a family tradition to be, you know, a part of church. And so for them, it's a lot about sentimentality and sort of church is kind of like a family reunion. These kind of people don't always come a lot, but when they do, it's about nostalgia and things like that. And so we know, and again, you know, for some people, it is this alignment with God has called me to be a part of that church. God has given me these gifts, and this is how I'm living out my ministry and mission within the church. Is by being a part of this church. That should be a question that I probably need to start asking when we're joining the church. You know, how do we align ourselves? So, you know, God's got a lot of churches out there that do a lot of different things. Is God called you to this particular church to live out your discipleship? And so just beginning with that question, where are you on that? Why this church? And it's a question we all need to wrestle with from time to time, that we be a church that is very clear that we're about making disciples and living out our discipleship within that church. And so here we go on this little journey that we start today with Jesus. And as I say, these Mark is the bullet points. He gets right to the point. And so I have some questions as I read this. You know, Jesus is walking beside the Sea of Galilee. He sees Simon. And I'll stop right there to say, if you're new to church and you hear me, you know, we get to this point where he says he saw Simon, his brother Andrew, and you think, where's Peter? You know, I thought you said you were doing a sermon series on Peter. Don't worry. Simon is Simon Peter. He's going to get his name changed in a few weeks here, and we'll see that. But at this point in the story, his name is Simon. And Simon is a very common name for little Hebrew boys, for little Jewish boys at that time, and even now. Simon's a very very common name among little Jewish boys, and I guess they grow up to be men, but Jewish people. And it comes from the Hebrew word that means listener, one who listens, a listener. That's Simon. That's the, you know, it's where the etymology of where, you know, that word came from. And so that's interesting for Peter, isn't it? Because he wasn't always the best listener. He was impetuous at times. He was reactionary at times. He had a quick temper. He's not a person that you would like single out as being like a good listener. And yet that is his name. Have you ever considered your name? Do you know what your name means? You know that your given name? How many of you know your given name, what it means? You've done the research on that. And if you're not raising your hand, why haven't you done that? Have a little intellectual curiosity. Why don't you? But, you know, because names have meanings. And so my parents, when they named me, my first name is David, which means beloved. And so I think about myself. And I'm not always the most loving person. I'm not always beloved, but they name me beloved. And then my middle name is awful. I mean, it's not awful, literally awful. It's just my name is not David Awful Benson. But it's a terrible name that I partially blame my sisters on, because they were old enough at the time to correct my parents and say, no, bad choice. But they didn't. And so my middle name is Egbert. David Egbert Benson. And quit laughing. Egbert. And so, that's my name. Egbert means mischievous. So I'm beloved and mischievous. And so, but I don't know what you are, but here we have Simon. And at this point, you know, that listener, which is, you know, he listened maybe at the right times. That's one thing I would say about Peter, or Simon at this point in the story, that he did listen at times. And this call is one time when he did listen. When Jesus said, come follow, he did respond. They were fishermen, he and his brother. In fact, everybody in that community pretty much around Galilee. And if you've, I know some of you have been to Israel because I've been there with you. I've been to Israel several times. I will tell you that the region around the Galilee, it is not real big. It feels to me, and I think it's probably a little bit bigger than that. I haven't done the dimensions. About the size of Rockdale County if there was a big lake in the middle. So, you know, the stories that you read, particularly in the life of Jesus, they took place pretty within a close proximity to one another. And so I've always wondered, did Peter and Jesus know each other before this encounter that day next to the shore? Did Jesus know them? Had they been to temple together? They go to little Hebrew school together? Did they play together? Did they see Jesus with John the Baptist? Well, we don't know those things. Those are questions we bring to the story. But know that, you know, Peter and Andrew were fishermen. That was the family business. And it just wasn't something they casually done. Like, I like to fly fish. I'm a fisherman. You know, this was their business. This was their economy. This was what their family depended on for their livelihood. And so imagine what you do for a living that gets you money, and suddenly you just walk away from it all because somebody comes up and asks you to follow them. I mean, that's a pretty big move. And so, again, it's the bullet points, and it's okay to bring some questions to the text. But I think the point in the gospel and the writer wants for us is the immediacy of what happens next. Jesus says, come follow me, and I will send you out to fish for people. Now, if you grew up in sort of the traditional reading of that, I will make you fishers of men. You say, oh, I love the way that sounds. I will tell you, the Greek reading of that, I will send you out to fish for people is much, much more in line with what the text actually says. When the text says, there's a different kind of implication. Let me back up one step and say, it wasn't an unusual thing for a young Jewish boy to go and study with a rabbi. Jesus was a rabbi, and so... In John's gospel, we see that in particular with those people, those first calls, that they were going to be a part of Jesus and to be tutored by Jesus. And that's what people would do with rabbis. They would go and they would stay with the rabbi to study the Torah and to learn about the Hebrew traditions. And usually every rabbi had maybe a different part of the Torah that they recognized and that they thought was important. They held above another part. So what would be Rabbi Eli's what would be his emphasis? And it might be something about justice or mercy to the poor or the orphans, or it may from rabbi to rabbi it would vary, but people would go and they would ask to have that rabbi mentor them and follow them. What didn't happen was rabbis going out and recruiting people. That was unheard of. And so Jesus to come out and say, come follow me, was backwards. That's not the way it was done. That's what also makes the story so kind of abrupt. Jesus is giving this offer that he also gives to us. And so they were invited. What they were invited to was not a study, but to be a part of a movement. He said, I'll send you out to fish for people. And then it says, at once At once, they left their nets and followed him. You know, I think about, there's another parable that we'll come across, but what my response might have been if Jesus came and said, follow me, would I be able to put down my fishing nets? Would I be able to put down what I was doing, my livelihood, my family, my tradition, and walk with Jesus when he gives that offer, when he says, come follow me? Would I be able to do that? Because I suspect most of us would be like me. I was like, wow, that sounds really compelling, Jesus. I need to know more. And then I got to go back and take care of some things, you know? I got to tie up some business parts. I need to make sure that my family's taken care of. I just come now. I can't do that. But that's not what the gospel says. They said, at once. At once. And I do believe part of that is for us to understand the urgency of following after Jesus. And so we see this listener Simon, who listened at this time, and at once they left and followed after him. I'm guessing that those of you who are parents or grandparents, you have great memories of your kids' first steps. You remember your kids' first steps? Teresa, you remember Chris's first steps? Yep, she does. Yeah, of course you do. It's a big deal. You know, when particularly your first child walking, you want them to walk as soon as they can, you know. And I remember that some of our friends were telling stories that their child had walked at like 2 months or something, you know. No, they walked at 10 months and stuff like, well, my child is advanced. He is advanced, and so he's got to walk. And you know, he walked literally on his first birthday, on the day he walked with his granddad Bert, who's passed away since. But you know, it's a beautiful memory that I have of those first steps that my son took, you know. But I want to tell you something about those first steps, and you know this to be true because of your children or grandchildren or your nieces or nephews or other babies that you've seen, that they don't immediately go from taking that first step to going to the Conyers School of Ballet and signing up, right? They don't do that. Or you know, just signing up for the track team to be a sprinter. You know, that first step may just be one step and then they fall down. Or they may be a couple little steps and fall down. And it's expected part of the process. You know, you don't go from not walking to suddenly being this star ballerina. There's steps along the journey. There's skills to learn along the way. And so with Peter, we see this first step today in our text. This first step in following. But know this. He wasn't always perfect. He had many times that he fell. He had many times as he fell, and he got back up again and tried it and learned and grew. Just like it is for you and me. And you know, we don't look back and say, wow, back there when I was a baby and I was toddling, boy, I was terrible. That was awful. No, you know that it's part of the progression. It's part of the growth. And so it is with discipleship. And so maybe for some of you, you took a step one time and then afterwards you failed. Maybe, you know, your step was you were at some point in your life is going like, I got to get my life straightened out. I'm dealing with this terrible sin, this addiction, this problem, this broken relationship. So I'm going to give it over to Christ. I'm going to take this step of faith. And, you know, like on Sunday, it felt really good. And on Monday, you're back to the same way again. You're just going like, it didn't work for me. You took that one step and you failed. And just know that that's just part of it. You know, you got to get back up and go again. Or maybe you were took a step and really went out of faith because you felt called to a certain ministry. And you started or helped begin this ministry, and you had such high expectations, and it didn't happen. And you were so discouraged, and so you just kind of retreated and kind of sat back down. And you're kind of scared because you think you're going to toddle again. You know, that the idea is that It takes step after step after step, and you get stronger and stronger and deeper and deeper. That is the path of the disciple. That's what Jesus calls us to. And as we watch Peter, we see that. We see that lived out in his life. And there's some great stories in Peter. He did some great things, but he had some great failures. And one of them happened on the night before Jesus went to the cross. Most of you know the story. They're in the upper room for the Passover. All from Jewish background, so they all knew the story. Jesus, in the course of the story, said that that there would be people that would fall away and betray him. And Peter, impetuous Peter, jumps right up and says, "You know, not me, God. I will never, never deny you." And Jesus said, "You know, Peter, three times before the cock crows twice, you're going to deny me tonight." Peter says, "Oh, no, I wouldn't do that." And Peter fell hard. It's just such a great story of restoration that we'll finally get to the Sunday after Easter. But my point is that this starts with a journey of taking the first step. And so this day, we come to take these first steps to come back to God's altar.